Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
That's right. It's political commentary time, and we're joined on the line by Lara. How are you?
Kia ora, morena. Yeah. Morena. You know, it's quite a week, I think. It's been quite a weekend.
Yeah. What are they up to down there, do you reckon?
Well, the only other thing I could think about, really, was that Michael Laws is maybe going to come back, but that's not really, you know, it was hard to think about what to talk about today other than that, really, and a bit of New Zealand First stuff, but, you know, like, there's not much really going on at the moment.
Yeah, a little bit of a lull, but, yeah, I'm interesting seeing, I feel like things are definitely going to pick up again soon, you know, like the Greens are launching all of their campaign fundraisers and having sort of parties all over the place to raise some money, and I feel like you're starting to see things bubbling away, but there's a bit of a lull this week. But we have this New Zealand First policy restricting voting to citizens only, which, given the current climate, feels a little Brian Tamaki-esque.
Yeah, so we've got a very interesting democracy in New Zealand. I mean, I like to think it's interesting, but like, I'm sure internationally it's kind of interesting. Sometimes it's a bit strange compared to other countries, but we've kind of got our own culture and our own way of going about things, right? So, you know, like, and of course democracy, I would say democracy and voting rights, it's not necessarily the system that we would design from the ground up if we, you know, got a bunch of people together at the moment, but it's got an important legacy, and there's, you know, generally the way that this country's voting rights have worked is we've gone more inclusive over time, and that included in 1975 in the third Labor government, good old Big Norm, Norman Kirk, back in the day. That government did a lot, actually, the 1972 to 1975 Labor government. Some Labor parties could maybe be a bit inspired by that, anyway. So, love Big Norm, love that government. If anyone, yeah, just honestly, that they just did so much. Like, the DPB is a great example, one of my favourite examples, that was, you know, life-changing for so many women in particular at the time who were trapped in situations, you know, domestic violence situations. And that. Anyway, side note, but they did some stuff around electoral law reform, including some changes to the Māori electorates that National then reappealed. Classic. But what they did is brought in permanent resident voting, and permanent resident in this context is like pretty much defined as anyone who has a visa that means they don't have to leave. So there's no end date on the visa. So we've had that since 1975. So if you've got a visa where you don't have to leave, and I think it's 1 year you've been in New Zealand and you've got that, plus that, you can vote. You've got voting rights. So you can enroll to vote. Legally, you have to enroll to vote, which is something that a lot of residents and new migrants don't know about. But the Electoral Commission doesn't fine them or anything. They kind of take this approach of going, oh, probably good if the first interaction they have with the electoral system is not a $150 fine. So they kind of leave people be. And we know that the newer the migrant, the less likely they are to have enrolled to vote straight off the bat. It does take a while for people to kind of go, oh, I can vote here, sweet, and enroll. But, yeah, 1975, we've had that law in place. And generally, like, a lot of countries don't have that. They do restrict citizenship. For example, Australia, our nearest comparator, restricts the citizenship rights. And, you know, that means we've got, what is it, hundreds of thousands of Māori over there with no voting rights, for example. But that's just kind of how things have run in terms of citizens being able to vote. So it's a kind of like a not, you know, it's not being just restricted to citizens. So yeah, it's a curious one. I don't see the need necessarily. There's no kind of widespread concern about voter fraud or foreign interference. I'm not really sure what the gap it's meant to fill is. We, as part of the Independent Electoral Law Review, we heard a few kind of stories of maybe people being pressured to vote a certain way, and people maybe trying to, like, we heard rumours of, like, the odd person trying to, like, sell their vote because they didn't really care because they're a new migrant, but no real evidence on it whatsoever.
So there's not hard evidence that this is a necessary policy?
Not at all. And, I mean, what I would say is that, like, it's just, like, it's weird. And, like, one of the things that I would also add to that is, it was classic populism, right? And so what I would add to that is, for National and ACT, So ACT and New Zealand First, one of the big things that differentiates them as parties is ACT goes for a lot of those new migrant voters and a lot of those second-generation migrants. So I just don't think that ACT would ever let this fly if they're in cabinet, right, because they're going to disenfranchise a bunch of their voters. And that's just like, you know, we want basically any discussions of electoral law, constitutional law, rights and so on and so forth to be based on principles and to be based on, like, what are our values flowing through to our principles and our laws. But basically, with anything with voting, it's so hard to change anything. Like, it's so hard to change the law to make the voting age 16, for example, because parties always look at what's in their best interest and they always politicise it. And so it's a thing where it's like, ACT isn't going to want to do that. When you look at the National Party have particular, you know, kind of a particularly good record of picking up votes in, like, Chinese new migrants in particular, but a lot of other migrant communities as well. And they kind of pride themselves on having those relationships. I mean, similar to David Seymour and ACT. So I can't see that ever actually getting over the line. This is the reality of it. But it's a really good kind of populist talking point, right? Because, like, we're talking about it, but we're not talking, you know, about a bunch of people will be talking about it around the place of, oh, yeah, it should be for citizens. So, you know, like, that's kind of what it's designed to do, because there's just no way that they can ever get it across the line. The parties that are left aren't going to agree either. So, like, great, you've got maybe New Zealand First gets to 15%, you know, or something in that range, but they're not, that's not a basis for changing voting rights.
It also feels as though heading into this election, more so than I guess I've ever witnessed, I don't know what you think on this, but there's so much corridor around changing the sort of boundaries for voting.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, we had the electoral reforms pass and people feeling as though that was sort of like a breach of people's civic rights. And now this corridor coming up, it feels a little worrying for the direction of our democracy.
The direction of our democracy is terrible, right? So we've seen this huge decline in journalists over the last 20 years, from 4,000 to like 1,000 and something, you know, like, not good. We've seen a huge decline in research funding for any research that criticises the government as well. Pretty much all of that funding's been cut, but we've seen no accompanying extra, like, Official Information Act reform or anything like lobbying reform or donations reform, none of that. And then we've got some really concerning changes in the Electoral Commission. So Te Hapori Matihiko and the Digital Equity Coalition recommend looking them up for people. They've just been sort of publicising the fact that they've written to the Electoral Commission because that Electoral Amendment Act, one part of it that changed the electoral law, was it about a year? Yeah, about a year ago. That also included some provisions that, like, no one really looked at the time because they were busy focused on the 400,000 people who won't be able to vote. But they changed the law, so it was like that the Electoral Commission was able to use email and text, which is a good thing, right? Like, that's actually a good way to contact people rather than post. But that means that they've done a whole bunch of stuff, like, people aren't going to get an easy vote card this time. If they've got an email on record, they're going to get emailed their easy vote card, which is just like, what? Like, what? Sorry, what? Like, it just blows my mind. Like, we know that with people, if you want to get people to do something, you've got to, like, post them something, you've got to call them, you've got to email them, you've got to text them, and then you've got to follow up again and get them to do all the things, you know, like, that's just not how humans work. So we get a lot of bounced emails for easy vote cards. And it's, again, these things where we know, like, in terms of who votes for the left and who votes for the right. It's like the people who have the housing instability, the people with the lower incomes, the people who have got, like, a bunch of kids, they've got more stuff to do, you know, that kind of stuff. Those people tend to be left-wing voters, or the more marginal voters. Again, migrants tend to be less likely to vote. But all of those groups, like, on average, they're more likely to be left-wing voters, and those groups, it's going to be harder for them to vote this time around. So that, you know, these changes to the lack of an easy vote card. I mean, it's not going to be an easy vote card if it's on your freaking email as a
counterintuitive,
PDF.
Counterintuitive, yeah.
No, it's not easy at all. That's annoying.
Yeah.
And then, like, the more steps you put, I mean, we've known since the 1950s, 1957, Anthony Downs wrote a book on the, like, economics of voting, and it was about the costs and barriers, 1957. So it's bad out there. Yeah.
So, you know, we look at this and all of these things that have been raised by the government in terms of the electoral reforms and then this policy proposal from New Zealand First, And then, you know, the lobbying investigations that are going on right now. It's like, should we be calling this government corrupt? Like, should we be calling it what it is? Or
it's certainly starting to look that way, isn't it? I mean, that's quite concerning, I think, and disheartening for a lot of people. But what I would say is that, like, everyone listening, like, you need to check that your enrollment details are up to date, because there's been things that have happened. Like, I've got a friend who, like, found herself off the roll. And she was like, she owns a house. She's got a PhD. Mum stood for a political party a bunch of times. So she's the kind of person who, like, all the boxes are ticked for, definitely will turn up to vote and be enfranchised, be able to vote. Mm. But even she found herself, like, not on the electoral roll. She was, like, past the dormant roll on the other one, which is, like, extinct or something. It's like, oh, my God. So everyone needs to kind of check. Like, don't assume, but are you still enrolled? What email or phone number do they have for you? Do they have your email from when you were 17 years old? You enrolled to vote. Mm. And it's like, I was talking about this with a mate, where it's like, you know, I had Banana Chick 2007 as my email when I was like 11. You know what I mean? Like, yes. Is that going to be your, I don't know what that meant, but, you know, like, it's like, why, is that your email still there? Like, your weird old freaking Hotmail is on your email, or like your work email? You know, like, so just check that your details are up to date with the Electoral Commission. I also was messaging with a friend earlier about, like, okay, what, she's like, oh, well, I had to update my, how long it has been since I've been back in New Zealand, you know, for the Aussies. So, you know, again, people overseas, as long as they've returned in the last 3 years, they'll be able to vote in the election, and it's easy to vote online. So everyone just kind of needs to update their details, and then maybe talk to some people that they know of, like, hey, have you updated your details? Especially those who are younger and those who have moved house recently. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where we can kind of, like, as individuals, if we all talk to 10 people, we can, and then they talk to 10 people, we can actually kind of cancel out a lot of this. And I know a few community organisations are going to be organising enrolment drives and various things closer to the time, more like in September. But for now, it's just like, you know, especially those low-hanging fruit friends. Like, hey, if you enrolled, I've actually moved house. Oh, you need to do the form. Like, and just that kind of thing of having these conversations. I mean, apparently in an ideal world, we'd ask them when they were going to do the form and follow up. But maybe we're not that intense, but as people. But, you know, like, either nag people or, like, I don't know. There's action we can all take as individuals there. And it's quite surprising, again, like, the people who aren't actually fully enrolled. I mean, the two examples I've given, again, they've been researchers in politics heavy areas, you know, and they still had that risk of being disenfranchised this time around because, I don't think I ever see, but it's in the 2 weeks before polling day, the 12 days before polling day in the advance voting period, people can no longer enroll and vote or update their details in their time.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge pivot or a huge change away from the sort of legacy of our electoral law being more welcoming over time and more liberal franchise. So, yeah, that's the thing that we need to try to get around, basically.
Look after your type B friends. The ones who have just everything everywhere.
Tap in, organise,
collaborate.
I mean, you could have a party. You could have some kind of event. You know, like do something.
Yeah. A voting party.
We love an excuse for I mean, it's even like an enrolment party at this stage because it's going to be two steps now. It's like you've got to enrol everyone and then you've got to get them out to vote.
Two parties.
Yeah. It's taking this work that's existed since the 1950s and going, what are the things we could do that would stop people from being able to vote without us, like, making people have voter ID laws or actually taking away some rights?
Yeah.
That's been the trend over this term. And then now with Winston Peters' announcement and New Zealand First announcement that they would actually try to move towards banning residents from voting, that's moving into the, hey, Trump-style voter suppression, you know, remove black people from the electoral roll kind of territory. So we'll probably, like, that's kind of the concerning next step there. But for now, it's like actually a lot of these rights have been impeded upon because these barriers have been put in place. So, voter enrollment party, text some people. But then we've got a whole voter turnout party. It's like, two parties.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Enrollment party and then a voting party, a two-party system that might actually work, would you believe it?
Well, that's about all the time we have for this morning. But thank you so much, Lara. It's been great chatting.
Yeah, thanks. It's like good old voting rights.
Yeah.
You take them for granted till they're taken away.
It's dire out there, I swear. All right, we'll catch up with you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Lara. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.